You're listening to a new episode of the Trojans Talk OT Podcast.
Hey guys, Mason here. Esther and I just wanted to give a brief disclaimer at the beginning of this episode today, as there's some different topics, terms, and components of the USC Chan OT program that may not be yet common knowledge to you, so we thought we'd simplify them to help the process and help you really engage with the episode's content. To get started, I know I've talked about this in previous episodes, but USC Chan does its Level 2 fieldwork a little differently than other programs. In all OT school, students will conduct sometimes Level 1 fieldworks and always will conduct Level 2 fieldworks. Level 1 fieldworks are brief, shadowing opportunities where a student will go maybe 6, 7, or 8 times to a fieldwork opportunity and just shadow a therapist to learn more about a patient population. Whereas Level 2 fieldworks, students will go typically for about 3 months to a specific practice setting and will gain clinical skills. And Level 2 fieldworks are required for completion of your degree program and to be able to sit for the NBCOT, which is the National Board Certification of Occupational Therapy exam. Most OT programs do 2 Level 2 experiences that last 3 months. But it's a little different here at Chan, where we have 1 Level 2 experience that's 3 months and 1 year-long experience that's part-time where students work on a project. And Esther is going to tell us a little bit more about that.
So USC has a really unique way of doing their doctoral capstone, where you're going to be placed at a single site for an entire year. The fall and the spring semester, which is the first 9 months, is part-time, so around 20 hours a week. And the last 3 months, which is your summer semester, you're going to be at the site for 40 hours a week, 12 weeks full-time, and also working on completing your doctoral capstone. You'll usually be with one OT who's assigned as your clinical instructor, who will also help you gain additional knowledge as an OT, but also help you with this project as well. A lot of the information that Jaden gives us can seem very overwhelming as a prospective student or as a brand new OT student, but do not be alarmed. This may not be currently applicable where you are in your OT school journey, but it'll eventually become extremely useful for you. Still, we encourage you to listen to this to gain some insight on the doctoral capstone process, but also just gain some insight on OT professionalism and what projects may look like. And this is also very useful if you're specifically interested in pediatric OT, which Mason will give us a little bit more information about.
Yeah, thanks, Esther. Jaden gave us a lot of valuable information during this episode, and it was all around pediatrics. The setting, which is called early intervention, that Jaden conducted her fieldwork in, is a type of setting where occupational therapists are working with very young children, typically from the ages of like 1 to 3 in that kind of age range. And it's called early intervention as you're getting an early start in their development process, really helping them achieve different kinds of developmental milestones. So when she's talking about early intervention, that's what she's referring to. A lot of times in the episode, we mentioned something called SI, or sensory integration. That's what SI stands for, so sensory integration, and it is a theoretical practice framework that informs a lot of pediatric occupational therapy. It was created by Jean Ayres, who's actually a USC alumni, and it kind of posits that through different kinds of actions and behaviors and activities and things like that, we activate different sensory systems in our bodies. And these sensory systems have a lot to do with our regulation or our ability to kind of stay calm in different kinds of settings or get overwhelmed and overexcited in different types of settings. As occupational therapists, we focus on doing different kinds of activities in an SI framework to give children different sensory inputs to help them stay more regulated and be able to perform the different activities like going to school, getting dressed, things like that, independently without getting too overstimulated or over aroused throughout it.
And with all that summed up, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Mason here with the Trojans Talk OT podcast, and I'm really excited to get us started on a brand new episode. So today we have a lovely guest for you all today, and I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Esther to get us started with our guest.
Today we have Jaden with us. She is a recent doctoral graduate, and she did her doctoral capstone and level 2B fieldwork in the pediatric outpatient setting. And she did her doctoral capstone on parent education for a pediatric outpatient clinic. So I just wanted to start off by asking you to give us a quick general overview of your capstone and how you got the idea for your project.
Yeah, so my capstone was developing and creating and then implementing new parent education curriculum that was attached to our social skills group. And I really came at it from like a sensory-based perspective. So that was my project in a nutshell. It came to fruition because my clinic had really said parent education is something that's really important to us, that we want to focus on, we want to explore ways to improve it. And it kind of just blossomed from there based on the results of my needs assessment and my literature review and all of like the in-between steps. And so we sat down for a meeting towards the end of the semester and said, here's everything we have. How can we actually use this to implement in the clinic? And all sort of came to the conclusion together that reworking the social skills curriculum, the parent education portion of it, was going to be the most beneficial for everybody.
So thinking about the timeline, was that towards the end of the fall semester or the spring semester?
Yeah, I know it sounds a little complicated. So obviously you guys know that you need to like have an idea by like the beginning of the spring semester. So we did. I had that general idea of parent education as like the general topic of my capstone project by that like January deadline. And then after, in the spring semester, when I was doing the literature review and the needs assessment and sort of continuing to work through developing what it all means and building the project proposal, I came to my clinic probably around maybe like end of February, March time. And that's when we sat down and said, what does it all say and what can we do with it? So that was really when I actually had we all had this idea of like, what am I doing? And it sort of came to be because we were like, I have this proposal and I don't know what I'm gonna write in it yet.
Okay, thank you for clarifying. It seems like it was a pretty natural process, that really collaborative effort from you and the OT to really help the needs of the clinic. So that's amazing to hear. I'm gonna pass it on to Mason for the next questions.
Yeah, sure. And before I ask the question too, I just wanted to comment on it because I think it's super interesting. You talk about like the parent education, especially coming from like that kind of like SI sensory perspective. Me and Esther both did our level twos this past summer in pediatrics, so we're kind of still like got peds on the brain. I don't know about Esther, but for me, I had to do like a little project, like a little mini kind of thing during my 2A, and it was also kind of creating some sort of parent education thing. So I feel like parent education is big on the rise, and I think it's really interesting that you talk about it too with your project, because I feel like so often parent education gets overlooked. And because the clinicians are so busy with their caseloads and so busy, you know, seeing their patients, they don't have time to go back and like add things to those different niches. And that's where students, I think, often kind of come in and are able to kind of fill that need, fill that gap with it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective. I mean, like parent education is sort of the bulk of early intervention, and it does a little bit get dropped off when it comes to like outpatient pediatrics or like adolescence, once you're outside of that EI age range, because the focus of intervention is more with the child. So it is a huge area of need in a lot of clinics. And like you were saying, like time is really was one of the hugest determining factors that came out of my needs assessment, and both the parents and the clinicians, because I spoke to both for that portion of the project, were like, one of our biggest barriers to doing this is time. Clinicians don't have time at the end of our sessions based on the structure of how our clinic works, and parents need to run, or parents don't have time to schedule it, and then there's no billing that works. So it was really interesting, and time was definitely one of the biggest factors.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, and it's also so important to continue what you're doing in therapy at home and in different settings, because that 1 hour of therapy, if it's not consistent with the rest of the child's life, it can, you know, the skills may not transfer over. So the importance of giving parent education, who primarily spends the most time with their child, I think that's so important, and I can't wait to hear more about your project with this.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really glad you were able to kind of rise to that level of need at your facility. And I think, like Esther was saying, parent education is so important too, because it also kind of defends ourselves, I think, as a profession. It kind of gives us more examples of, you know, what do we do? How can we do it? And I think it helps the parents to better understand the impact that occupational therapy can have on them. A little bit of a segue. Obviously, the way USC Chan, or maybe not obviously, but the way USC Chan kind of conducts its field work and its capstone in a combined process within our OTD program is actually pretty nuanced compared to other different programs and the way they do it. I'm curious if you could maybe tell us a little bit about your experience balancing level two field work simultaneously with creating some sort of doctoral capstone. What was that experience like?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, especially because the terms get a little bit, I would say, misused. You know, when you're actually creating and implementing your capstone, you are no longer a fieldwork student. You know, so the expectations of you as a student change. You don't have to be concerned about, you know, passing your fieldwork at that point. You've completed your 12 full-time or your 24-week part-time fieldwork, so you aren't a fieldwork student anymore. And at least for my site, because we weren't fieldwork students, the expectations of things like billing for our services and documenting and having our own productivity and having our own caseloads were very different from when we were students. So in terms of like the actual capstone semester, it was definitely an adjustment. I have to give my clinic a lot of credit because they really built us up like we were new clinicians. So I didn't show up on day one and have the expected 75% productivity standard on my caseload. I wasn't even seeing all of my kids yet that day without support. I saw maybe like three of the kids that I had already been treating for, you know, 6 months. Those ones that I had support day one, and then it was like, I know these kids really well, you know, licensed therapist, you can step back for these ones, but here's another kid that I don't know, and I would love your support for this kid for 4 weeks. And so I didn't even build up to having a 75% productivity caseload until week, I think, 5 or 6 into the summer capstone. Yeah, so it was really nice to have that support. And then in terms of like the times that you are a fieldwork student, obviously you're in classes and it's part-time. I found that it was a really nice balance because I still had that day off. That was probably the biggest adjustment to make from like student to capstone was no longer having a day off, especially because, you know, in scheduling my part-time classes, I did it where like I loaded up one day. So I still had a dedicated like Tuesday or Thursday completely off of school. That was a really big adjustment for me just from like 2.5 years of having a day off to no longer like working full-time. But in terms, again, of like when you are a fieldwork student, I think it's really just important to leave work at work. You know, I know in outpatient peds, that's like the biggest advice they give you if you can. But of course, there are times that, like, you know, you have a progress report due or you have this something and there's a hard deadline. But honestly, I would rather have stayed after my technical hours for another 15 or 20 minutes to get it done than to bring it home. That separation of home and work was really important to me, especially because I lived on campus. And so I didn't have a study area that wasn't my room. So I was doing school at home. I couldn't also be doing work at home. So I would say that's probably like my biggest advice, I guess, for maintaining that occupational well-being and stability is like keep it separate as much as you can, because I know there's a lot going on.
Thanks so much for talking about that too. I think us hearing that as students, like Esther said, it's so much like helpful information to kind of feel. And I feel like that kind of statement you had about like that entry level, I feel like people keep trying to tell me that because they're like, as a student, you kind of get into this, especially as a fieldwork student, you get into this imposter syndrome of thing, like you need to like be this expert clinician right in the moment, but then also you have to be that by the end. It's kind of what it feels like. And a lot of times you forget that you're just trying to get to that entry level. And obviously you always strive for above and beyond, right? Who doesn't?
Yeah.
But that's kind of sense, that little humanizing note, I think, is really helpful because of that kind of stress of the level two process.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, I think one interesting point that I feel like we're touching on a lot and what you've kind of your experience is kind of highlighting for me is the importance of kind of that almost professional communication with your site throughout the capstone process. It seemed like because you had a lot of this good communication, this good channels for being able to kind of advocate for your needs and your requirements in the program, your requirements for your capstone, it supported your progress. How would you recommend going about like setting that up or things kind of in that nature?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are at your sites for a whole year. And I know like it's so exciting and you're there part time. And so it can feel like it takes maybe a little bit longer to like build rapport with your colleagues and your coworkers and your directors. And I hear you on that. And some people might not necessarily mesh 100% with their fieldwork educator, but I would really urge you to just like keep trucking on, like really build that relationship with your clinic. You know, I used to get so nervous to even like speak at our weekly meetings because I was only there for 20 hours a week. But, you know, trust yourself, believe like you're there a really long time. By the time we left, like everybody was sad that we were leaving. We're a part of the team. You will become a part of the team. And even if you don't get along with everybody 100%, like you're still a colleague, a coworker. And I really think just like taking that in stride is important. And you are a professional. You're an adult. You have been working your butt off to get to where you are. You know your stuff. You know, you touched on imposter syndrome. And I do want to say, like, get really familiar with the words. You know what? I'm not sure. Let me ask my mentor or let me ask my supervisor. And things like that go so far. And then you go and you check in with your supervisor and you're like, hey, this thing popped up. Like, what do I do? And be eager to learn. And all of these things are going to help you build this communication. So then you can say, all right, here's everything the literature said. What are we doing next? And just really, I think like being eager to learn and being a part of the process is really helpful.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Okay, so the majority of our audience is students, and you already provided so much amazing insight, advice, and so much wisdom. But I was wondering if you had any last advice that you could offer to students who will be pursuing their doctoral capstone, maybe this year, maybe in a couple years, but do you have any advice for them?
Absolutely. And it's going to feel like the worst advice in the world, so I'm so sorry. But front load everything. Do your best right now because you're going to keep seeing it. I drew on things from quantitative analysis and qualitative in my write-up for my portfolio because my mentor was like, hey, you talk about these articles being poor quality. What do you mean by that? And so I really had to dig in my brain back to that Tracy's Big Eight of like, what did I mean by that? How was I appraising these articles? So front load everything, pay attention now. It's all important. Put your best foot forward. You know, like my needs assessment, I checked in with my faculty member and she was like, it's fine. You didn't really, you know, like put the themes in the right way, but like, I'm not gonna dock you on that, but you'll just have to fix it later. And I was like, okay, I'm too lazy to do this right now. And then I had to fix it later. And it was far worse fixing it later because I had a million other things going on later. So like, if I could have done it again, I wish I would have fixed it then. And all the little things like the organizational chart, like I had to make changes to it during my capstone because I didn't understand it well enough to do it right the first time. So that's what I mean. I'm like, this advice sucks, but it's so, I feel like I wish I had it. Like, front load it now, do it now, because it's way worse to fix it later. And it comes back. You know, like all of these things do come back. I feel like your third year is really the time where you see every single thread coming through. And you're like, oh, that thing from mental health that we were talking about then, I need to do a literature search on this one little thing that we spoke about. And I'm gonna do a logic model because my project is this type. And I learned that two semesters ago. And oh yeah, I have to appraise articles now. So it really was like the tracking everything. I like, they always say, you know, your capstone is the culmination of 3 years and it can feel like a lot of fluff to hear that until you're actually doing it. And it's like, oh my goodness, this really is utilizing everything they've taught me.
I think that is such incredible advice that Mace and I and our viewers will really take to heart. Hearing you say that really set like a fire in me to like re-motivate myself, like really, like the organizational, that's like an assignment we have due.
I know.
And now I'm like, I'm going to put everything into that. And that really is providing amazing insight to help my future self and providing great motivation. So thank you. That's incredible advice.
I'm so glad. It's like what I wish somebody had known to tell me this time last year. And it all comes up in your studying for the MBCOT. Like I get like random questions in my studying for like, how did they mobilize knowledge? Or what part of the PICO question is this? Or there's a lot of PICO questions. Like sort of random little things that you're like, oh, I thought I only needed to know this for school comes up in the exam.
Well, I think we just have to, you know, tip our hats to you. I feel like this information, I mean, although it does kind of make me and Esther think like, oh, we have to put more energy into what we're doing, it's super helpful. And I think for any of our listeners kind of hearing that, it'll also be super helpful to know. I think overall, we've really enjoyed having you come on the show today. I feel like you've just given us some great perspectives. We loved hearing about your project. We loved hearing about your experience. We didn't mention this before, but obviously the doctoral capstone and the way the fieldwork is and all of that is still rather new, right? I mean, we're still in the few like beginning years of that. And so I think just hearing experiences from you kind of going through the whole thing, it's just super valuable, you know, as the program continues to kind of be developed and things like that. Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you're interested in learning more about Chan degree programs, student resources, or division news, feel free to visit our website at chan.usc.edu.